Okay, so ready to dive into a case that really makes you think about where the lines are with free speech these days, especially when it comes to students.
Always ready for a good legal puzzle. Hit me with it.
All right, this one's called Bell v. Itawamba County School Board. It's all about what happens when a student's online life, specifically what they post, crashes into their school life, and the courts have to figure out who's got the right to say what.
Ah, the classic online speech dilemma. Even more complex when you throw in the school environment. A lot of gray areas there. So what happened in this Bell case? Someone gets suspended for posting something controversial.
You could say that. The case basically boils down to this question: can a school punish a student for something they posted online completely off school grounds just because it targets school employees? Like,
Right.
is that crossing a line, even if what they posted is, let's say, provocative?
That's a tough one. I can see both sides. On one hand, students have First Amendment rights, and those don't just vanish when they leave school property. But on the other hand, schools have a responsibility to keep things safe and orderly, and online stuff can definitely spill over and affect that environment.
And that's exactly what Bell grapples with. We're talking about Taylor Bell, a high school senior who, back in January 2011, uploaded a rap song to his Facebook and YouTube.
Okay, so not something done on school computers or during school hours. We're talking personal time, personal accounts. Got it.
Exactly. Bell created and shared the song using his own resources off campus, but the content of the song was definitely aimed at the school community, specifically two coaches. It accused them of sexual harassment, and the lyrics were pretty graphic.
Whoa, okay, so not just mild criticism here. We're talking serious allegations and strong language. I can see how that would raise eyebrows.
Oh, yeah, definitely. There's one line in particular that gets quoted a lot: gonna get a pistol down your mouth. Definitely intense stuff. And to be clear, at that point, these were just allegations. Nothing had been formally investigated or proven. It's important to keep that in mind.
Right. Important context. So we've got a student using a pretty public platform, social media, to make serious accusations against school staff with some violent imagery thrown in. I'm guessing this didn't stay under wraps for long.
Not at all. This being social media, the song spread like wildfire. It ended up reaching over 1,300 students.
Wow. Okay, in a school setting, that's a huge audience. That's bound to get back to the administration and the coaches themselves. What was their reaction?
As you can imagine, the coaches felt threatened by the song's lyrics, and understandably so. The school ended up taking disciplinary action against Taylor Bell. We're talking a 7-day suspension and a transfer to an alternative school for the remainder of the grading period.
So not just a slap on the wrist. This had some real consequences for his education.
Absolutely. And that's when Bell and his family decided to fight back. They felt his First Amendment rights had been violated, so they filed a lawsuit under Section 1983, which basically lets you sue government entities, like a school board, for violating your constitutional rights. And to make things even more complicated, Bell's mother joined the lawsuit, bringing in a 14th Amendment claim about her parental rights.
Okay, so now we're talking about multiple layers of constitutional issues. The First Amendment is about free speech, obviously, but the 14th Amendment, that gets into due process, equal protection, and how much power the government has to interfere with individual liberties. Interesting that the mom brought that angle in too. What was her argument?
Well, her claim focused on how much authority schools have over what students do outside of school. She was arguing that the school overstepped its boundaries and interfered with her rights as a parent to guide her son's upbringing and education.
I see. So we've got this big question of where the school's responsibility ends and the parents' begins, especially when it comes to things that happen outside of school hours and off school property.
Exactly. And in this digital age where social media blurs those lines even more, it gets really tricky.
Absolutely. And I bet this case ended up raising a whole bunch of legal questions that courts hadn't really dealt with before.
You nailed it. So let's dive into those legal questions. The courts had to figure out, first and foremost, does that landmark Supreme Court case, Tinker v. Des Moines, which deals with students' free speech rights on campus, apply to something like this, to online speech that happens off campus but still targets the school community?
Yeah, that's the big one. Tinker sets this important precedent, saying that students don't shed their constitutional rights at the schoolhouse gate, but it specifically dealt with on-campus activities, like wearing armbands to protest the Vietnam War.
Yeah.
This is different territory.
Right. And then there's the question of whether Bell's rap song was actually a true threat, which wouldn't be protected by the First Amendment. Or was it more like a form of artistic expression, even if it was controversial and used some harsh language?
That's a crucial distinction. True threats are a very specific, legal category. It's not just about someone saying something mean or upsetting. It has to be a statement that a reasonable person would interpret as a genuine intent to cause harm. So the courts had to determine if Bell's lyrics fell into that category.
And then the third big question was, did Bell's song actually disrupt the school environment, or was it likely to cause a disruption? That's a key part of the Tinker standard.
Right, because Tinker says schools can regulate student speech if it causes a substantial disruption to the educational process. So the courts had to figure out if this rap song, even though it was online, created enough of a scur to justify the school's actions.
And buckle up, because the legal journey of this case was a bit of a roller coaster. First, the district court took a look and sided with the school. They applied the Tinker standard and said, yep, this song was disruptive enough to warrant disciplinary action.
So round one goes to the school board. But I'm guessing Bell didn't just give up there.
Oh no, not at all. He appealed the decision, and a three-judge panel from the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals actually reversed the lower court's ruling. They said that the song didn't meet that substantial disruption bar set by Tinker.
Interesting. So a win for Bell, at least for a little while.
Yeah.
Sounds like this panel of judges felt his free speech rights outweighed the school's concerns. But what happened next? Did it go to the Supreme Court?
Not so fast. The school board wasn't done fighting. They requested what's called an on-bank review, which means the entire Fifth Circuit, all the judges, got to weigh in on the case. And this is where things took another turn. The full Fifth Circuit reversed the panel's decision and went back to siding with the school. They said that a substantial disruption was actually foreseeable because of the song's content and how widely it was shared.
Oh, wow. Okay, so a real back and forth in the courts. And I'm guessing the Supreme Court had the final say.
Well, Bell's legal team definitely tried to take it to the highest court. They filed a petition for a writ of certiorari, which is basically asking the Supreme Court to review the case. But the Supreme Court declined to hear it. And that's significant in itself.
Right, because it means the Fifth Circuit's decision is the final word, at least for schools in that circuit, which covers Texas, Louisiana, and Mississippi.
Right.
But it doesn't set a national precedent. So other circuits could potentially rule differently on a similar case.
Exactly. It kind of leaves things a bit messy legally without a definitive answer from the Supreme Court.
Very much so. And that's actually really common with cases that deal with these emerging areas of law, especially around technology and the internet. The law often struggles to keep up with how quickly things change in the real world.
Totally agree. So let's unpack that Fifth Circuit's on-bank decision a bit more, the one that ultimately sided with the school. Their whole argument really came down to how they applied the Tinker standard to this online situation.
Yeah, I'm curious about how they connected those dots. Tinker was all about in-person speech happening on school grounds. Mm. How'd they stretch that to cover an online rap song?
Well, they made a few key points. First, they emphasized that Bell intentionally directed his song at the school community. He knew it would be seen by students because he posted it on social media platforms they used. So it wasn't like some private diary entry. It was aimed at a public audience within the school.
Okay, I can see how that makes it different from, say, just venting to your friends in a private message. This was public and meant to reach a wide audience within the school. What else did they focus on?
They put a lot of weight on the violent lyrics and how those lyrics made teachers fear for their safety. The court basically said that this fear among the staff directly affected the school environment, even if there wasn't some big physical disruption.
So even if students weren't walking out or getting into fights, the emotional impact on the teachers, the fear they felt because of the song, that counted as disruption in the eyes of the court.
Exactly. And to your earlier point about true threats, they didn't necessarily rule that Bell's lyrics met that legal standard, but they said the fear they caused was reasonable enough to justify the school's response.
Interesting. So it wasn't about proving Bell intended to carry out those threats, but rather about the impact those words had, the sense of unease and anxiety they created.
Precisely. And there's another crucial element here.
Yeah.
Foreseeability. The court said that it didn't matter if an actual disruption had already happened. What mattered was whether the school could reasonably predict that a disruption would likely occur based on the song's content and how far it had spread.
Oh, I see. So the school didn't have to wait for things to completely blow up before taking action. If they could make a solid case that this online speech was heading towards a disruption, they had grounds to intervene.
Exactly. But of course, not everyone on the Fifth Circuit agreed with this reasoning. There were dissenting judges who raised some really important concerns about expanding Tinker into the realm of off-campus online speech.
Yeah, that makes sense. I can imagine some judges being hesitant to give schools that much power to police what students say or do online, especially on their own time. What were some of the main arguments from the dissenting side?
Well, they were worried that applying Tinker to off-campus speech would give schools too much leeway to punish students for things they say or do in their personal lives, even if it has some connection to the school. They felt that students should have greater freedom of expression when they're not on school grounds.
Makes sense. It's like, where do you draw the line? If a student posts something critical of a teacher on their personal social media, does the school get to step in and punish them for that, even if it was posted on a Saturday night from their own home?
That's the million-dollar question. And the dissenting judges also pointed out that Tinker was created in a different era, long before the internet and social media existed. So they question whether it's even the right framework for dealing with these kinds of online speech issues.
Right. It's like trying to fit a square peg into a round hole. The legal landscape has changed so much since Tinker, and the courts are still trying to figure out how to apply these old principles to these new situations.
Absolutely. And remember, Bell's mom's 14th Amendment claim about parental rights? While that didn't get as much attention from the courts, it adds another layer of complexity. It raises the question of whether schools have the right to, essentially, parent students when they're off campus.
Yeah, that's a tricky area. Schools definitely have a responsibility to provide a safe and supportive learning environment, but they're not supposed to be replacing parents. It's a delicate balance.
So where does all of this leave us? Even though the Supreme Court didn't take up Bell, the case is still really important, at least within the Fifth Circuit. It expanded the reach of Tinker, giving schools more authority to regulate some types of online speech, especially when it's directed at the school community and could foreseeably cause a disruption.
It's definitely a significant precedent, even if it's not nationwide. And it highlights this constant tension between protecting student free speech rights and ensuring schools can maintain order and protect their staff.
And it's worth noting that there have been other Supreme Court cases since Bell that have dealt with student speech, like Mahanoy v. BL, which we touched on earlier. In that case, the court actually limited schools' authority to regulate off-campus speech. They said that schools have a much stronger interest in regulating on-campus speech, and that off-campus speech should generally be left to parents and law enforcement.
Oh yeah, Mahanoy was a big one. It kind of swung the pendulum back in the other direction, putting more emphasis on students' First Amendment rights. But even with that ruling, the lines are still blurry, and it seems like the courts are still trying to figure out the best way to navigate this constantly evolving world of online speech.
For sure. Bell and Mahanoy together show just how complex this issue is, and they leave us with this really important question. How do we protect both students' free speech rights and the need for safe and orderly schools in this digital age? It's a question that educators, lawmakers, and the courts are all still grappling with.
Yeah, and I think it's a question that everyone, not just legal experts, should be thinking about. We all have a stake in finding the right balance here.
Couldn't agree more. So, as we wrap up, let me throw this out there for our listeners to ponder. Given what we've discussed about Bell and the later limitations set in cases like Mahanoy, what types of online speech, if any, do you think schools should be allowed to regulate, even if it happens off campus? And where do you think the line should be drawn? It's a complex issue with no easy answers, but it's a conversation we need to keep having.
Well said. It's about finding that sweet spot where students can express themselves freely without fear of unfair punishment, but also ensuring that schools can maintain a safe and respectful learning environment for everyone. That's the goal. And figuring out how to get there is the ongoing challenge.
Couldn't have said it better myself.